This is based on some work I've been doing with Ted Jacobson. I thank you very much for being here and for giving me the opportunity of giving the seminar. So I'll be talking about black hole entropy. And so this is the outline of the talk. I'll talk a bit about different ways of understanding black hole entropy, different ways of trying to understand it and to conceptualize where it comes from. And then especially entanglement entropy is one of the things I will focus on. Then I will discuss how we try to marry this problem of black hole entropy with the concept of the normalization group and see how it helps clarify it and understand better some of the things that worry us about it. And I will discuss this both for free quantum fields and for interacting fields, and then the conclusions. Okay. So a brief history, like two-point history of black hole entropy. 73, Bekenstein introduced first the concept, like postulating that perhaps there was some entropy associated with the black hole event horizon proportional to its area. And then 1 year later, Hawking confirmed that this was true through calculations in quantum field theory of space-time, like deriving Hawking radiation at the Hawking temperature and the associated black hole entropy equal to area over 4g. And ways to understand this entropy of black holes, there have been, of course, many attempts from different theoretical positions, coming basically like I will divide them into two categories. Those that try to come from a fundamental theory of the universe or of quantum gravity, like string theory loop quantum gravity, like perhaps counting some microstates of the black hole or of its horizon. And a less ambitious attempt to describe it through an effective field theory point of view, in which we have like gravity and fields in a continuous space-time, and we're trying to understand black hole entropy as much as we can through them. And I will restrict myself in this talk only through this point of view. So within this point of view, we have several things more or less understood. There is a kind of zeroth order, we could call it a bare gravitational black hole entropy, that comes from the saddle point evaluation. So what the classical, purely classical, evaluation of the Euclidean path integral for quantum gravity, as was shown by Gibbons and Hawking. That is like a pure gravitational entropy that the black hole has by itself. And then there is a contribution of quantum fields on the black hole background. Like they are living on this gravitational background, we have quantum fields, including if we want like perturbative quantum gravity, that is gravitons. And these also contribute entropy, which can be conceptualized in many ways as entanglement entropy across the horizon, or as like a thermal entropy of the fields outside, which are in a thermal state. And this entropy also scales with the horizon area, but the coefficient is divergent. So this is the bare gravitational entropy. This is the like quantum field contribution, which is divergent. And in principle, this was, I think this was first said by Susskind and Uglum. Maybe there were earlier like indications that this should be absorbable in a normalization of the Newton constant. So that the area is just, oh, I think I'm missing a 4 over in these equations. So that the entropy comes out as area over 4g always when we talk about the renormalized g that we really measure. So a bit more about one of the particular ways of understanding this entropy of the quantum fields is entanglement entropy. This is a particular simple way of putting it, like because of a very natural concept. Like across a horizon, because we cannot observe what's on the other side, it is like natural to think that there is an entropy associated to this ignorance of what is on the other side, which is entanglement entropy. If we have a pure quantum state on a region, which is the union of two regions, and we only look at what happens in one region, then the reduced density matrix that we form by tracing over what is all on the other side of the surface will have an entropy given by the standard formula, trace rho log rho. And even if the original state is pure, this entropy is not zero. And it's proportional to the area of the surface between them, but again, with a divergent coefficient, like as so often happens in quantum field theory. The entropy scales as the area over epsilon squared in 4 dimensions, generally epsilon to the d minus 2. So it is natural to think that this has something to do with black hole entropy. And in fact, on the black hole background, like when we're talking about the Hartle-Hockwin, our state, our pure quantum state on the whole manifold, is the global Hartree-Hawking vacuum, like on the whole, like a manifold, and we trace over what's inside the horizon. Then the state, the state described by this rho A, is actually a thermal state at the Hawking temperature. So this entanglement entropy, in this case, is actually exactly the same as the thermal entropy of the modes living outside the horizon at the Hawking temperature. If you use a Euclidean partition function representation for this density matrix, which we call Z of beta, then the entanglement entropy will be given by a thermodynamic formula like this one. But this has a slight complication in that here we have to derive with respect to beta, so we have to evaluate the Z of beta at a temperature different from the Hawking temperature. And this is. Yes.
And the thermal entropy that you compute by the Hartree-Hawking procedure is not divergent. It's 1 over 4.
1 over what?
Am I correct? The Hartree-Hawking calculation where you go to the Euclidean section and eliminate the canonical singularity is not divergent.
What is not divergent is the Berg gravitational contribution that I was talking about before. The contribution of quantum fields is divergent. I'll talk about more.
What do you mean by the Hartree-Hawking state of the?
No, sorry, maybe we misunderstood each other. Can you repeat the question?
No, what do you mean when you say equals?
Okay. So the entropy of the thermal entropy of the field of quantum fields, like outside the horizon.
Okay,
it's divergent. This is why you need to introduce a regulator, like the brick wall or something like that. There are different ways of regulating it, but so
you're insisting that the two things are different, that the entanglement entropy due to the quantum fields is different than, quote, the bare gravitational entropy due to which you measure in the Hartree-Hawking calculation.
Hartree-Hawking or Gibbons-Hawking? You mean the Gibbons-Hawking evaluation?
Yeah,
I'm saying that those two things are different, yeah.
Okay.
I will make more clear the relation in the next slide, actually.
Okay.
So you anticipated a bit there. So for the moment, forget about that. Here I'm talking about entanglement entropy of quantum fields on a fixed traditional background. So there's no path interval over gravity or anything like that here. And this is divergent, and this is evaluated through this formula, which, as I was saying, forces us to evaluate at a different temperature than the Hawking temperature in order to take this derivative. And this is like introducing a conical singularity at the horizon in the Euclidean spacetime, which is a bit of a problem for the calculation. It can be done, but we like to do it using only regular manifolds. And this is a way to do that. Through the whole canonical partition function, which I go now to the question. Consider now, this is a version of the Gibbons-Hawking calculation, the Euclidean path integral approach. To defining black hole entropy, including both gravity and matter fields. So we set up a partition function over schematically g and phi, e to the minus an action, and there's a path integral taken over fields, Euclidean fields, that satisfies some boundary condition of being spherically symmetric, if we want to talk about Schwarzschild, and having temporary, like a period in the Euclidean time dimension, beta, at a certain boundary. Then we integrate out over the matter fields, formally, we define as w, e to the minus w actually, the result of the integral over phi, and we define the full gravitational effective action, gamma naught, as the bare gravitational action, sb plus this matter contribution w. So that gives us this. And then we do the saddle point approximation so we evaluate this gamma naught at the solution of the effective, fully quantum corrected effective equations of motion. So it will be a solution that depends on beta because that's the boundary condition that we had set. And then we can apply the same thermodynamic formula. But now this derivative is an on-shell derivative, so to say. It doesn't introduce a conical singularity because we are evaluating this whole thing at the on-shell solution for a given value of beta and then changing beta. So it takes us from one solution to another solution, so to say. So this is an on-shell procedure which matches more closely the original Gibbons-Hawking one. It's actually the same thing, but using the effective action instead of the bare one. First let's read this. This is a bit out of order, actually, when you think it logically. If we can assume that the effective action gamma naught is well approximated by the Einstein-Hilbert action with a neglectable or zero cosmological constant, and including, of course, as well, the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term, the 1 over 2 like integral in the boundary, sorry, not 1 over 2. It's 1 over 8 pi g, like integral over the boundary of the curvature k. Then the resulting metric at which we want to evaluate is the Euclidean Schwarzschild. And then the result that comes out of from here, just as in the original Gibbons-Hawking calculation, will be A over 4 G naught, where G naught is the Newton constant that appears in gamma naught, the one that includes all the quantum corrections. So from this point of view, this renormalization property I mentioned before of the entropy is like immediate. I wouldn't say them. It's changing the temperature of the canonical ensemble. Like you have a canonical ensemble, you assume over fields with a certain temperature, like which in this particular case is a boundary condition. And this actually the deep reason for this is that the gravitational Hamiltonian is a boundary term. So you only need to set the temperature at infinity or at a certain boundary to be more precise. And then you vary the temperature. Like it's not the mass, really. Like or it's related to the mass perhaps, but yes. So yeah, they are related. Yeah.
Okay, so what I wanted to argue here is that this procedure should give the same result from the one I described before, because the total derivative is a partial one plus a term involving the derivative of the metric with respect to the temperature. And this contribution should be zero because we are the only solution, so the gamma BG is zero. So this is a kind of like formal, if you want, argument that the total black entropy will equal the gravitational entropy plus the entanglement entropy, because of this argument, like I'm arguing that the matter contribution to this, like changing SB to gamma naught, and how that alters this formula will be equal to the entanglement entropy, and so the divergence in the entanglement entropy like should be like renormalized, and the total result should come out as this with the fully normalized G. But we would still like to be able to make this normalization properties like explicit in a calculation without needing to worry about how to regularize in these divergences. There have been some papers saying that if you regularize the divergences in different ways, you get different results, or you get some things and you get different things, like depending on what you do with them exactly. So and furthermore, these divergences are deep UV divergences. So and we would like to argue that the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is really something, and all these properties of it are a phenomenon of like the low energy effective theory, that something that can be understood without needing to understand the deep UV like Planck scale physics. So, yeah. It's true, like that is true. I'm just assuming that, I'm just assuming that you can well approximate it like by the certainly there are more terms to it. So I'm assuming that you can approximate it by the Einstein-Hilbert action, and that the other things it have will give like small contributions to the entropy, like if any. it's a big assumption. But after all, like, you could say that the physics that we measure comes from the effective action, like, and that this seems to be well approximated by Einstein-Hilbert. No?
The corrections be of the kind as in Wald's formula? It is. Shouldn't the corrections be of the same kind as in the Wald's formula, where you get the area plus surface integrals of curvature?
Yeah.
Because it's the variation of the effective action with respect to the curvature.
No, I think, if you're working with some kind of massive field, then it's certainly true below a certain scale, I can probably express things in a local. But if, for example, I had massless fields, say photons, gravitons floating around, then I don't know what that scale, there is no scale like that. So in general, I don't know how important it is. I'm interested to hear the rest of the talk.
Yeah, there's certainly local terms. There are due to massless fields, I know certainly some of them are of this form, like R log the number T and R.
like which are the ones that cause the low energy quantum correlations to Newtonian Newton's law. But these are, after all, they have 2 hours, so we can accept them smaller than the single term. Like, I don't think there are anything like a non-local that can invalidate this kind of approximation. Okay, so this was the introduction. Now I want to go to discuss
the relationship of this with the romanization group. So this is sort of the picture I will present. Like here, like we said that we were integrating over all the five fluctuations, and now what I want to do is to integrate only some of them, like integrate them down to some Wilsonian scale k. So then everything that comes out from this integration adds up with the Berg gravitational action into like what is defined as a flowing effective gravitational effective action gamma k of g, like which as we keep integrating down, k to zero will reduce to gamma naught. This is it's not exactly the same gamma k that is discussed in the like asymptotic safety approach, because in that case you're talking about quantum gravity, and this g of which the metric depends is the this g on which the action depends in that approach is the expectation value of the metric only, and here it's not that, like, but like we don't have this real distinction between the expectation value of the metric and the quantum, because we will evaluate at the saddle point the gravitational path integral. But it's very related, right? These are like it's conceptually very similar, as you will see in the next slide where I defined it. So then the idea is that you have integrated down this mode, you define your gamma k, and from this gamma k, you will define a effective gravitational entropy at a scale k, which will be given like within the approximations of low curvature and so on, in which this is valid, as the Bekenstein-Hawking formula with a running gk, which is a coefficient in that gravitational effective action. And then, like the rest of the modes that you have not integrated out and that are still like quantum, so to say, will still have to take in, you still have to take into account their quantum entropy, their entanglement entropy, like or whatever however you want to call it. But that will be computed now with a UV cutoff at scale k, because like you only have to take into account the modes below k for that. So as you move k, you will have this description in which the entropy gets two contributions, like which add each other and balance each other, so that they always give the total black hole entropy, which only in the limit in which you are k equals zero and you have integrated out everything is given by the Bekenstein-Hawking formula with the fully renormalized value of g that we measure at low energies g naught. So this is the kind of picture that I want to present. The good thing is that the relation between this and this, like and this renormalization property, that when you add up like modes or integrate down and move this scale k, the balance of entropy flows between this term and this term from entanglement entropy to gravitational entropy. The nice thing is that this can be all discussed without any reference to the like super high energy physics. Like so, let's discuss how this works when a quantum field is a minimally coupled scalar, like the massless scalar, so the simplest thing we can have. So then the full effective action, as we said before, is defined by this, and the gravitational effective action, like at a certain scale k, we define it by this formula, which is the same, including a IR cutoff term, which is the same kind that they include in the asymptotic safety calculations. So it is a cutoff function that cuts off from the path integral, like suppresses, more accurately, the modes that are below a certain scale k, and is zero for the modes above k. So then, if we take the difference between these, sorry, one more thing. So this gamma k can be satisfy the Vaterick flow equation, which is basically the same equation that is used in also in asymptotic safety. It's just that here we have like Navier squared instead of the full Hessian of the action, including the gravitational terms as well. And in this case, like this is integrated trivially to give like a one-loop determinant, which is trace log of this operator. Mm-hmm. For the difference between gamma at scale k and gamma at scale zero, which is the full effective function. So this expresses the relation between the effective function at scale k and at scale zero, and this other term, like that expresses the difference, as I was saying, has an inbuilt cutoff at a scale k, because as I was saying, this this cutoff operator is zero for k greater than zero, so this cancels out. And now we can compute this through a Heath kernel expansion. I will spare you the calculations. And assuming Dirichlet boundary conditions for the field, then we evaluate all the terms in this formula at the particular metric that we're interested, at the G that is the Euclidean Schwarzschild. Then the term that contributes at the order we're interested is only the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term. And applying the operator gives us the entropy. So applying that to this formula gives us this relation between the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy at scale zero, the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy at a scale k with the running Newton constant k, g of k, and this other term which comes from this, which is like proportional to k squared, and can be identified with the entanglement entropy of the modes below a scale k. Recall that the entanglement entropy, like, oops, was like alpha a over epsilon squared. Epsilon is your short distance UV cutoff scale. So in this case, this is pretty much like that with a particular numerical value. And k squared is functioning as our UV cutoff. But one has to introduce this caveat, which I have like stressed there, that this is the Euclidean modes below scale k. It is much more tricky to understand exactly what this means in the original Lorentzian spacetime. Yes.
Alpha, which is 1 over 48 k, for the minimally coupled scalar field.
I don't mean that there's anything particular to that value, because that depends on the choice of regulator. Different choices of this function give you different numbers here.
Yes, so depending on the choice regulator, it also will depend on the fields that you couple to.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. So then the what you're calling GK, which is the bare gravitational part,
yeah,
depends on the number of fields that gravitational field is coupled to, even though it's a property just of bare gravity.
Yes, certainly. Like GK depends on which fields you are coupled to, yes. Like
but GK is supposed to be the purely gravitational part.
Well, things are intertwined. Like, right, you have to say, so let's put it this way. Like when you do the normalization group, right, you integrate out some fields and that changes the value of the couplings, like, and then obviously that running value of the couplings will depend on which fields you have integrated out, right?
Like, right, so why aren't you saying that the right value of black hole entropy is the 1 over 4 g h bar, normalized g h bar,
oh, yeah,
plus entanglement entropy?
No, I'm saying that the value of, so I'm taking the point of view of that, like what gives you the total, the real value, the value that you will go and measure, like is the full effective action. So the value that we'll measure is a over 4 g naught, where g naught is a fully normalized g. Like, and that's something that you can measure for gravitational experiments. And I'm saying that that g will be the same amount that appears when you go and measure black hole entropy. Like, and I'm saying that at least if you measure it in the super like IR regime in which the effective action you have to use is gamma naught. Now, I'm saying that if you do experiments at another scale, like at which you use another higher gamma k, then...
So what's confusing me is,
yeah,
that you start off saying that there are two contributions at a scale k, a part which is due to the entanglement entropy of the matter field,
mm-hmm,
and another part which is pure gravitational.
Yes.
If they add up to something which it doesn't know about the number of different matter fields, then the entanglement entropy, which is due to matter fields individually, has to be proportional to the number of matter fields. But then the bare gravitational part also has to know about the number of matter fields. And I'm just inquiring as to
I understand what you mean. Yes. So. Let me take this point of view. It depends on what you take as fixed, right? Like, let me think. So if you think of the bare gravitational G at a certain scale, at a certain high scale, as something that is fixed independently of the number of matter fields that only has to do with gravity itself, then it is true that the entropy that you will measure at a lower scale, like this A over 4 g ren, like at that lower scale,
will depend on the of the number of fields. Yes. You can turn it around. You can say that, no, the G that you measure and know is the G at low scales. So that means that what you define the G at the higher scale will depend on the number of fields. Like,
no, I understand the logic. Just an objection that has been made in the past against the separate accounting of a gravitational part and a matter part is that somehow mysteriously, not just the matter part, but also the gravitational part, has to know about the number of matter fields. And because it's supposed to be a property of, quote, just the gravitational part, it's mysterious.
So,
let's see. Anyway, maybe go on.
We can discuss it later. Yes, I think, I'm not sure if we have a substantial disagreement or not yet, but we can discuss it later. Like, okay. Any other questions here?
Is that function R literally a function and you're sticking the derivative in there, or am I supposed to think that I'm
RK is an operator. Like RK is some kind of operator, it's a function of another operator, like right?
Okay, I'm not supposed to think that I'm looking at eigenvalues of the Laplacian.
You can certainly compute it as, you can think of it as a function of eigenvalues of the Laplacian too. If you were on flat space, you can certainly write this momentum space, and then it would be an RK of P squared. That's what you're asking.
Okay.
Yeah. But since I'm on curved space, I write it this way, like because I don't know what are the elements of the Laplacian in general, right? Okay. Now, let me describe this now for the case of the non-minimally coupled scalar,
which is quite interesting. So in this case, the action that we use is the Bell gravitational action plus the action for the massless but minimally coupled scalar with a coefficient psi that couples it to the curvature. And we can apply the framework in the same way, like this operator delta is now just Nabla squared plus psi r, all the rest works the same. But assuming Dirichlet boundary conditions, now the result, as has been pointing out earlier this year by Martin Reuter and Daniel Becker, is different for the running of G in the bulk term and in the boundary term. If you write this gamma k as 1 over 16 pi gk integral of r plus a similar term, which is the boundary given Hawking term, then what I'm saying is that this will be a boundary g that will not run in the same way like as the bulk g. Mm-hmm. When your field is non-minimally coupled and when you use Dirichlet boundary conditions for it. And since the entropy is coming from the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term, it is the boundary G which appears. Yes, I'm using this kind of, psi doesn't.
I think when your field is free, psi doesn't run, right? It's interactions in phi that can cause running of psi, right? Like so. What was he saying? I was saying that the entropy comes out as area of 4G boundary, the gravitational part of the entropy that is, and what culture comes out of the calculation is that this G boundary runs in the same way that it will run for a minimally coupled field. This psi does not affect the running of the boundary term, it only affects the running of the bulk term. And in that case, the entropy comes out equal to the one for minimal coupling. However, if we use an alternative boundary condition, a Robin boundary condition in which the condition we set for phi at the boundary is that its normal derivative is proportional to the extrinsic curvature, then with this particular boundary condition, we can recover the same running for bulk G and boundary G. So then, and then the composition will give that the entropy is given by this, where if you cancel out all the A's, this is just the expression that tells you how G runs. And this is the standard expression for the running of G caused by a non-minimally coupled field, which of course the standard calculations usually assume that you're talking about the bulk G, not the boundary G. So we have these two possibilities. Either for Dirichlet boundary condition, then the entropy is just alike to the entropy caused by a minimally coupled field, and this term is not there,
this psi term there. Or for a different kind of boundary condition, we can recover the same running for the bulk term and boundary term and get this term there. And this term actually has been previously thought to be a bit problematic because it's a negative term, not entanglement entropy. So it's a negative term, for at least for generic psi, like in particular for psi sufficiently positive. So it cannot be interpretable as entanglement entropy, which is by definition positive. And the present consensus is that this term is what is called Wald entropy. Wald introduced a formula in which the entropy can be derived from the action, from its variation with respect to the Riemann tensor, which in the case in which you have non-minimal coupling, gives you, like, in addition to the standard area over 4G term that comes from the Baer Einstein Hilbert term, you will get another term that is the integral over the horizon area of phi squared, or of expectation value phi squared when the field is quantum. So this is the interpretation that has been given to this term. And so recall that in this formula, we have the full black hole entropy, which is described by the formula that you get at 0k. This is the effective gravitational entropy at scale k. And this is the contribution of the modes below k. This term with the 1/6 was the contribution of the entanglement entropy proper, let's say the same one that we computed for the minimally coupled field. And this contribution is now like exactly what you will get computing the Wald entropy of those field modes using a UV cutoff at scale k for computing the superposition value, which of course is divergent, like also, like if you don't put a UV cutoff. So this seems to be a nicely consistent thing, but we also like have this other possibility that of taking a directly boundary condition, and then we just do not get this term. And we're still trying to understand this, exactly how does the boundary condition influence the entropy, and why does that happen? So, yes?
Interpret the fact that you can conserve this term.
Sorry?
For the value of xi equal 1/6,
yes,
you mean that it's kind of it's safe at one loop? How do you interpret your calculation?
So this is the conformal invariant case, like the case with xi 1/6. And in that case, like the entropy this is a more general fact that has nothing to do with particular entropy, right? It's the standard calculations of the running of G, like caused by integrating out modes of a conformally coupled scalar field. And the fact is that when xi 1/6, then G doesn't run. Like, I'm not sure exactly why this happens.
Like, what's the conceptual reason for this? Like, wouldn't there be a fixed point? Or
scale invariance? No, you still get R squared divergence. Right? Just don't get R divergence,
yeah,
because that's not conformal invariance. R. It's just
It's not that gravity doesn't run at all. It's just the outcome that doesn't run, the G. Okay. So, yes.
In some sense, I have to think about G being a dynamical field, and then there's an excuse to say that I need to add an extra term to the action in the talking term. If I use that same rationale though, now you've got an extra Ricci scalar, are you going to add an extra boundary term that's, you know, extrinsic curvature phi squared?
Yes, actually, this will be the way of introducing this boundary condition. You have to add that term to the boundary action. Yes.
So this in some sense is a more natural boundary condition.
So it turns out that when you have this, it is not really more natural. No, let me see how to put it. So your boundary action will definitely include a term with psi, and it turns out that there are two possible like boundary conditions that kind of you can choose like naturally for the nominally coupled scalar field. One is a Dirichlet boundary condition, and the other one is speed of Neumann. It's something like this, but as far as we understand now, like with an arbitrary number there. Like so it's only for, we have chosen here -1 only because for this particular value it's particularly interesting because it recovers this relation 1/6 from psi that appears in the bulk, like G, which does not have this ambiguity. But we honestly was prepared to understand this better. Like we do not rule out that there might be an argument why this is the most natural, like a boundary condition. Okay, so now we will try to extend this ring for interacting fields. And in that case, it's like conceptually much more complicated because when you integrate out most of an interacting quantum field, that not only affects the gravitational effective action for the space-time you're in, but it also affects the matter action itself for the modes that you have not yet integrated out, their couplings will change. Like, so we have to use the full machinery of the Wilsonian normalization group here, like at least for the quantum field, we're treating gravity in a classical way. We define the Wilsonian effective action as scale k, sk of g and phi, by integrating out the field, including the Sayol cutoff, and using this bare action of g and phi plus phi, the two phi variables that you use in both actions, where this sb now we define as the gravitational bare action that we had before, the Einstein-Hilbert or whatever we have, plus all the non-kinetic terms of the action for phi. Like they are packed in this definition. And this sk then is the Wilsonian effective action for the theory below scale k. Mm-hmm. It's the action you include in a path integral for a theory that you cut off at a scale k. And you can separate into two terms. One that is its value at phi equals 0. And this, if you see, matches exactly your previous definition of the gravitational effective action, gamma k. And then the other terms, when you subtract out that part, give you the properly called Wilsonian effective action for the interactions of phi and so on, everything but the kinetic term of phi, which is the action you have to use to compute everything for phi below scale k. Mm-hmm. And to see how these evolve, now we cannot have a closed formula like the one we had before, like this one, that tells you exactly the relation between them. Now, in principle, you have to do it numerically, I guess. But the flow equation that you have to solve for finding how this SK run is this one, which is a version of the Polchinski flow equation. So it's slightly different to what you might have seen if you know the Polchinski flow equation for two reasons. One is that we express it in terms of IR cutoff function instead of a UV cutoff function, which is the usual way of expressing it. That's just a change of notation if you want. And the other one is that it includes this extra term, which is usually not included, because this term does not really affect in flat space. Like this term just does not involve phi, and it just changes the gravitational like part of the action. So let's assume, like I don't have any concrete calculation, hopefully yet, to show about this. But let's assume that you can solve this equation, like in a certain model, in a certain expansion, perhaps. And then you can decompose it to find these two parts of it, gamma k and s tilde k at a certain scale k. And then you can describe the black hole entropy as the total black hole entropy, which again is given, the total black hole entropy is still given by the same formula I had before, like the beta d beta minus 1 applied to the full gamma naught when you have integrated out everything. But you can decompose this at that operator applied to the effective gravitational action at some scale k, and another term that applies it to the path integral over the modes below that scale k. Here, pk is a UV cutoff propagator scale k that is defined in terms of rk. It's basically complementary to it, right? And this nk is a normalization factor, which is also something that comes out there. So in principle, you can do the same thing for interacting fields. It's just that the explicit formulas are more difficult to come about. But now there's still a problem with the conceptual interpretation in the case of interacting fields. Because of this fact that in an interacting theory, the momentum scales are interact with each other. And so if you cut off like at a certain scale k and define a subsystem that is the modes below k, then you will have like an entanglement between the two regions in momentum space. This was pointed out in a fairly recent paper, like where they computed, like, and they're fairly simple, like order of magnitude estimates that shows that this momentum entanglement entropy goes as a volume, like, and not as
certainly not as the area of anything. So, and this seems completely absent from our description. Like, we would have expected that at the lowest like relevant order, these two things will go as A over 4G plus other things. And the reason we can give why this is just that we have been a bit too fast to interpret, to interpret this term as the entropy of the modes below K. That was reasonable in the case of the free fields, like in which we could make this separation and between the modes above K and the modes below K, and they don't interact with each other. So the entropy of the modes below K is like their entanglement entropy proper, or the entanglement entropy plus Wald entropy is given by those formulas with K squared that I was pointing out. But in this case, we cannot really say that that this term is the entropy of the lower modes in that naive sense, because the entropy of the lower modes will have to include taken as a subsystem of the whole system, will have to include entanglement entropy with the upper modes. It's just a formal decomposition of the total entropy into contributions. We are identifying an effective gravitational entropy and an effective a quantum matter contribution to the entropy that makes sense at a certain scale. But we cannot say that that second term is equal to the entropy of the lower modes in some more strong sense. That is at least my present understanding of this. Okay. So to the summary. So I have argued that black hole entropy in this semi-classical description, in which you do not worry about quantum gravity and deep UV physics, is coming from the full effective action for the gravitational field. And you can do this with an Unschel evaluation. You don't need to introduce a conical singularity. And you can prove formally that this total black hole entropy that you compute from a full effective action, which is by definitions, if you want, at least if you assume that your effective action is more or less the Einstein-Hilbert action, then by definition, practically, this will be area over 4G with an anomalous G there. And we can prove formally this is equal to a bare action plus the entanglement entropy. But to make this explicit, needs regularizing divergences and worrying about UV physics. So we don't want to do that. So we introduce a sliding Gauge scale. And then at any scale k, we can describe these two contributions to the entropy and sort of follow them up from k equals 0 instead of down from the deep UV, which we do not understand. And for free fields, we have a clean interpretation of these two terms. One is the gravitational effective entropy at a certain scale. And the other one is the entropy of all the modes that are below scale k, which have not been included in the, which have not been packaged inside the gravitational effective action, which can be just entanglement entropy or also Wald entropy for non-minimally coupled fields. However, I should stress again that this is a picture coming solely, this idea of separation of scales and high momentum, modes above and below scale k, is something defined in the Euclidean path integral representation of black hole entropy that Hawking introduced. And it is not trivial at all, and I actually don't know how to do it, to translate this back into the Lorentzian space-time. Mm-hmm. So the actual degrees of freedom that are there, are how they relate to this picture is something that they don't understand very well yet. And lastly, for interacting fields, we can still define these two terms and track their evolution with the Polchinski flow equation. But we cannot even interpret in this case that the lower that the non-gravitational part of the entropy is the entropy of the lower quantum modes because of this entanglement existing between the upper and the lower modes. Okay, and outlook for further things that will have to be done to understand all this better. One thing I really would like to do is to be able to formulate this concept of algebraic running of the entropy within the Lorentzian picture instead of within the Euclidean one to make clear what are the physical degrees of freedom I'm talking about. And also clarify better under which conditions the entropy of the lower modes can be identified with entanglement entropy. Then I would certainly like to understand better all this thing about what happens for the non-minimally coupled field and how exactly its boundary conditions affect what comes out in the entropy at a certain scale. Then it will be interesting to apply this to a theory in which you have this mass thresholds at different scales. So the qualitative description is different. Like, so there's a real, like, the algae running is not that some couplings change their values, but that you have like kind of different qualitative behavior, like in this sense. And there is a paper on this, like on black hole entropy on the Owen model, but we would like to understand it like from our like mathematical apparatus, because there is a bit qualitative description. And finally, it will certainly be interesting to extend our framework for interacting fields to the case of quantum gravity, which is an interacting field theory after all. And I use the full machinery that the asymptotic safety community has developed. And if the conjecture that gravity is asymptotically safe in the UV is fulfilled, then even the formal need for a UV cutoff that is still present to make this path integrals which we start from make sense, then even that will not be any substantial need. And you could be able to follow this picture all the way, like as much as you wanted to the UV. Oops. And well, that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We still have time for questions. Okay, well, if there are no questions. Alejandro will be around also for next week.
Yeah.
So you can see him in his office for further discussions.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.